What's up, y'all? It's Drewski, and I've teamed up with Mountain Dew to produce a hilarious new basketball podcast called The Dew Zone with Drewski. Learn the backstories of your favorite ballers and celebrities like Jamal Murray.
Did you have like a favorite team? Was it the Raptors at the time or no? Was the Raptors even started around that time?
Come on, bro.
I ain't that old, fam. You're talking like I'm 50.
Taylor Rooks, Asia Wilson, and many more. You won't want to miss this. Listen to The Dew Zone with Drewski on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you listen to podcasts.
What up, listener? We wanted to take a second to thank you for listening to this Blue Wire podcast. Be sure to show your support to this pod by subscribing and dropping a 5-star review on iTunes, a follow on Spotify, or the appropriate dApp for any other platform you might be listening on. And if you're enjoying this show, chances are you'll like one of our 75 other sports podcasts. Find more shows you'll love at BlueWirePods.com. Thanks again for listening, and now back to your regularly scheduled podcast.
All right, the Red Nation News podcast is brought to you by Bet Online. Now, before we get into our regular scheduled programming, I just want to take a quick minute to talk about the structure of this podcast. So, normally, I'll have a guest on, and I'll have a contingency plan, a backup for my backup. And what happened this week is they all fell through. And I started the podcast by myself, and then later on in the day, I found out that Forrest was available to podcast. So you'll hear me mention off the top that I am doing the podcast by myself. That is not correct. That's only the first 13 minutes, and then Forrest comes in later. So I'll go ahead and put a timestamp in the video if you want to skip over that. Although, I think you should listen to the whole podcast because I give my thoughts on Kobe in the beginning of the podcast. But yeah. That's it. This podcast is just stitched together a little bit, but yeah, let's go ahead and get to the programming.
Blue Wire. Russell Westbrook is off to Houston.
It's going to be scary. Not for us.
No! James Harden just caught a body here in Los Angeles.
And Westbrook is on the freeway.
What's up, guys? We're going to juice podcast. My name is Salman Ali, at Salman Ali NBA on Twitter. And I'm not joined by anybody today because this is one of those rare occasions where Forrest is busy, all my guests are busy. Like, I have no guests today. I've tried several times this week to get guests. It's just one of those rare occasions where literally everyone is busy. So it's just going to be me today. And there's obviously a lot to discuss. It's been a heavy week. To say the least, and I guess we should probably start there. Kobe Bryant tragically died in a helicopter crash on Sunday, along with 8 other people, including his daughter, Gianna Bryant. And that's really where the tragedy begins, right? Like, that's 13 years old is just, that's heartbreaking. It's heartbreaking. I mean, Gianna didn't really get to live a life. Like, you know, you read and you hear all this stuff about how Kobe's lived this complete life. And to some extent, he has. But, I mean, Gianna, like, Gianna was just getting started in her life. Like, she had clearly big things ahead of her. And it's unfortunate that that got cut short. And the other daughter on that plane, and Kobe was just starting to figure out what he was going to do post-retirement. Like, he finally looked, you know, Kobe never, to me, in his playing career, ever looked sated. And what I mean by that is he was just never satisfied and had never really had a direction. He looked in the last couple of years of his life. And it just sounds so cryptic to say that. He just looked very comfortable. And he looked very ready for what's next. And that was just new for Kobe. I when Kobe was playing, I could never imagine him post-retirement. I just didn't know what to expect from him. And it looked like he was starting to find a direction, you know, perhaps in storytelling or with kids. And with the Mamba Academy and with the children's book he was going to come out with. And it's so sad. It's so sad. Particularly if you look at everybody, all the victims, like, they all had decades of life ahead of them. And I was just expecting to see Kobe in my, to have Kobe in my life for the next 30 to 40 years. Like that, like we do with all NBA legends. Like, we as an NBA community, we don't lose our legends that often. And it's been a point that's been noted, and it's still very sad every time it's noted. Like, we lost one of our legends before he got to grow old with us. You know, we still have Bill Russell. You know, we still have Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. We still have a lot of some of the greatest players of all time with us. And, like, that's what's particularly tough about this, right? Like, Kobe was just starting to come back into the NBA fold. He was starting to come to more games. He was starting to introduce his daughter Gianna to us. And now it seems like we're never going to see what Gianna grows up to be. And that's incredibly sad. Yeah, well, when this tragedy, like, when I got news of this, like, I just came back from a youth basketball event. So I was having a great day. And I went home, took a nap, and I was woken up with the news, and I was just shell-shocked. Like, completely shell-shocked. And to me, seeing that picture in front of the Staples Center with Kobe's face in black and white, and seeing, you know, his birthday to 2020, like, that to me was so surreal. And I didn't even know how to absorb that. And I'm seeing a lot of people talk about this, and, you know, it's a little comforting that other people felt the same way. Like, you just didn't know what to do. You're frozen, you know, like, it's, and the thing to me is, like, when the news broke, like, obviously TMZ broke the news, and that's what, like, you know, a lot of people kind of rushed to conclusions that perhaps this wasn't true. And, you know, unfortunately, like, TMZ's, over the last decade, they've gotten, like, everything right in terms of the celebrity deaths. And that, I was, you know, I'm with you. I wanted it to not be true, too. But I knew it wasn't. Because even, like, hearing helicopter crash, like, I remember Kobe, in his playing career, used to take that helicopter to the Staples Center. So the idea that he would, this would be a way he perished, was not, you know, like, it wasn't new to me. Like, that completely seemed viable, and I knew it was true, and it just, oh, man, it was tough. Like, and I wasn't even a Kobe Bryant fan. You know, I despise the man. Like, not the man. I despise the player. I rooted against him at every turn. I thought of the Los Angeles Lakers as the evil empire, as we all do in sports. Like, that's like, the Lakers are the team. They're like the sibling that only we're allowed to bully. We're allowed to hurt in the NBA community. Like, other people can't do that for it. Like, when other people do that, we get angry. Like, and that's how I always felt about Kobe and the Lakers. Like, we're allowed to make jokes at their expense, but it's all in good humor. Like, it's all in good fun. Like, it's the same way you would pick on a sibling. Like, and yeah, like, I root against Kobe at every turn. I thought he was arrogant, which he was. It's okay to talk about him like this, but you know, he was. And you know, like, that, I was surprised at how much it took me aback, because, you know, it's like a piece of you. Like, my NBA watching career had not existed without Kobe Bryant until a couple of years ago. And, like, that's the fact that we're not going to see Kobe with us for the next 20, 30 years, as I said earlier, that's incredibly tough. This was a hard week. That first day, I couldn't even check social media. Like, I couldn't watch the videos. It was I stayed off of it. You know, and we all have a propensity in society today to move incredibly fast. And, you know, like, it's days like that where I just wish we moved, like, 10 steps slower. Like, let me digest this before I start watching tribute videos or old games. You know, like, just give me a day. Give me a day. And, you know, the next day I started watching old Kobe games. Yeah, I mean, this guy was a fantastic player. You don't need me to tell you that. I mean, he was one of the 15 greatest players of all time. One thing I remember from my childhood, actually, is when I was in high school, I checked out a Kobe book from the library, and this was like when Kobe was at the peak of his powers. And I remember reading in Italy that he would play basketball against his shadow, because everybody in Italy played soccer and didn't want to play pickup basketball with him. So he would practice against his shadow. And I, you know, as a kid, you know, you're stupid. You try different things. Like, so I tried that for like a couple of days. I went to my backyard. I tried that for like a day or two. And then like after the second day, I was just like, this guy is just a psychopath. Like I can't even imagine doing this for any longer. Like, this is just something that Kobe would totally do. And I can't do, like, nobody in their right mind would think to do that, play against their own shadow. But yeah, that was Kobe. The biting the jersey, like that, like all the iconic moments, like they all came flooded back to me. You know, his footwork. I mean, his footwork in general in NBA history, it gets overlooked. It's some of the greatest footwork of all time. You're talking about, like, it's up there with like Hakeem and Kevin McHale in terms of like the greatest footwork of all time. Like he has some of the it's beautiful. Like it really is. It's something you'd like to teach to, you know, kids growing up playing basketball. Like just watching the way he jab stepped, the way he felt his defender on his legs, but when he was like in the post, it was very textbook and very you know, like, it wasn't a surprise to me that Kobe, before the Achilles, was aging really gracefully, like fine wine. Like, and I think that's what gets overlooked a lot when we talk about Kobe. Like, we all remember old man Kobe, but old man Kobe only existed because he tore his Achilles. Like, he was going to age really well. Those last 2 years were going to be really nice for him. He was aging, you know, people talk about how well Duncan aged going into the twilight of his career. Kobe was aging just as well. And it was to the point where if you just got, like, if the Lakers were any sort of competent towards, you know, the end of his tenure, they could have fielded a pretty good team around him. But unfortunately, they weren't. We had to see what amounted to a very sad Lakers team. But, you know, this week's not about that. This week's not about how depressing those Lakers teams were. It's remembering how great Kobe Bryant the player was, how complicated Kobe Bryant the person was. I am not naive to the gray areas in discussing him as a character, but I mean, I don't feel qualified enough to discuss all that right now, right here. And a lot of people smarter than me have went into depths into, you know, Colorado and all the you know, the rape allegations, the very, very serious allegations that Kobe had against him in the early 2000s. So I just want to remember Kobe the player and understand what happened back then. This was a hard week. It really was. It really doesn't matter where your fandom lies. I can almost guarantee if you follow the league closely for the past decade, you had a feeling in the pit of your stomach that just wouldn't go away. It really took time to start fading. I still have it right now. It's gotten better since Sunday. But, I mean, you don't know how to... human beings aren't good with dealing with grief in general, but when someone's taken away from you at such a young age, 41 years old, I mean, you just collapse, right? And it was one of those moments where, like, you kind of value everything in your life. You know, I thought Shaq on Inside the NBA put it perfectly in that tribute, like, you know, love your family, love everyone close to you. You don't know what's going to happen in the next couple of years. You know, like you just don't. Like life isn't planned. And it was definitely a moment to make you reflect. And we are back. Change of plans. We are here with Forrest Walker at Do Nots on Twitter. How are you doing, man?
Hey, I'm here. Pretty good. Things have been all right.
So I feel like it's only fair, since I spent the first 13 minutes of the podcast discussing Kobe Bryant, that we get another perspective and hear what you have to say about, obviously, his tragic passing, the passing of his daughter, everybody else on that helicopter, and his life, his career, whatever you want to go with it, you know, shoot.
Sure. So the first thing I say is that almost anything I have to say, other people have said better and with more resonance. So I'm not really going to get into the what everyone else has said. He will indeed be missed and was a huge impact on the league. And it's truly truly tragic, especially that more than just him, but there were 8 other people on the helicopter who passed on, including his daughter, who seemed primed to do great things. The thing I've been feeling about this that I think is worth saying, and I haven't heard people saying very much, is that I've actually been very enthused, I guess, hopeful about the responses to this. It seems like a lot of people, a lot of public figures in public situations have been allowing themselves to be vulnerable and to process this and to like better themselves publicly in a way which I think has been very good to see. I mean, we've seen people like Shaquille O'Neal processing this without any shame, and as well there should be none. I think that there's people's reflections on him and his life and on the way that one can improve themselves and learn from past trials and tribulations has been really good to see to me. That he was a complicated man with a lot of different aspects to him, some good, some bad. But I do feel like the response to this has been extremely positive in general, and I'm actually very impressed with a lot of people for allowing themselves to not only feel how they feel, but to personally grow due to it.
Yeah, I agree. I thought the response was pretty, I mean, for as good as it can be for something tragic like this, it was pretty good. Like there were no missteps along the way. The only thing, if I were to nitpick, you know, people calling for the Lakers to win one for Kobe, that kind of makes me a little uncomfortable. Like, as if the Lakers couldn't win this year, that doesn't, like, it's just a gray area. You know, you don't want to go there. But yeah, I largely agree with you. I think the responses have been generally positive, and you know, the complications with his life have been discussed, I think, appropriately. If you went to the proper channels, you know, gave time for the story to breathe, every part of his life was discussed. And the part you mentioned about Shaq really resonated with me, because I talked about that at the top of the podcast. Like, guys, if you, like, love your loved ones, like, it's really simple and it's really stupid to say, but I feel like it should be said. Like, appreciate them while they're here. You don't, life can't be planned. You know, everyone in your life you haven't talked to in a long time, please go out, take the time to go reach out to them. You just never know, you know, like, and not to say that you're expecting something bad to happen, but just, you know, like, cherish everyone you have around you. And when something like this does happen, you know, you can, obviously you'll still be very sad, but you won't have the, you know, that kind of pit in the bottom of your stomach of, oh, I haven't talked to this guy in 6 years. You know, you won't have, you'll have the proper appreciation for everyone around you, and you'll live a happier life.
Yeah. Tell people the things you need to tell them. And it seems like a lot of people are internalizing this, and that's something good for those of us who are here that can come of something like this.
Yeah. And this is kind of a goofy segue. I mean, I saw Kendrick Perkins reach out to Kevin Durant on Twitter after their very public squirrel. But I thought that's actually, you know, a good example of some of, you know, like some of the beefs we have in life are just really not important. Like they're really dumb. And when you boil it down, like there are much, much more important things than to argue about the stupid things that we argue about.
Yeah, there's a lot of perspective going around right now, and I think that's really good.
All right, let's get to some much brighter news, I guess. I don't know how one can possibly transition from that, but this is a Rockets podcast, so we should at some point discuss the Houston Rockets. Some news this week for the Rockets. Eric Gordon was moved into the starting lineup. Ben McLemore was moved back to the bench. This looks like it was in the works for a while. Ben McLemore's minutes had been steadily declining over the past couple weeks. I never really understood why he was in the starting lineup. Ben McLemore is a nice find for the Rockets, good player, but there's a difference between a good NBA player and a starting caliber NBA player. No offense to McLemore, again, good player. I think there are, you know, players on the Rockets that are more deserving of that spot, specifically Gordon and Daniel House. Either one, it doesn't really matter. As long as the starting small forward is one of the six most important players on the team, that's really all that matters. And I think Ben McLemore was not one of those six most important players.
Yeah, he's been doing really good stuff this season, but that's in large part relative to his role. You know, he's proven himself to be a reliable rotation guy, but like I said, it's different from being a starting caliber guy. And they gave him a shot as a starter. I think, you know, that it was well deserved that they would give him that try. But this lineup makes more sense to me too.
Yeah, and it seems like the Rockets were doing this because it helped their substitution pattern a lot more. Like, you could very cleanly fit in Austin Rivers and Eric Gordon as the starting backcourt off the bench, and Daniel House at backup power forward. But, I mean, just because it makes your rotations better doesn't mean it's the best way to go about things. Like, I just thought, you know, Gordon and House were more deserving. The Rockets in general have been doing a lot of experimentation lately. I mean, and it's kind of troubling that it's game 45 and they're still kind of experimenting to the level that they have been. Like, the other bit of news I have down here is uber, super, tiny, small ball. Because the lineup they played out there last was the smallest lineup since 1962 in NBA history. So, like, actively really, really, really tiny. And they just don't want to play Isaiah Hartenstein. They played PJ Tucker at center. And at backup center, they played Thabo Sefolosha, which is interesting because Sefolosha had been out of the rotation for a while, and it looks like they found a way to kind of sneak him in there. And when I asked Mike D'Antoni about this, I mean, it seems like they just want to get Russ and James going, but specifically Russ. Like, they want to get those drives to the basket. And, you know, Russ has been really, really good as of late, and that should probably be another news item. He's been Russell Westbrook. Like the start of the year, he was, like, not a – like, he was playing – To put into perspective how badly he was playing, like, statistically, he was like a below average starting point guard. And now he's playing, like, you know, closer to an all-star caliber guard. And that's really helped the Rockets. I think, you know, there's a lot of people making the correlation between how Russell Westbrook seems to have his best games when James Harden doesn't. And I honestly don't think those two things are related, or the fact that, you know, the Rockets' record isn't as great when he has like 30 points or more. I just think it's a case of circumstance. I think the reason the Rockets lost all those games has more to do with their defense than anything with Russ. But yeah, he's been playing really well, and this small lineup is a way to get him going, him and James going. James has been bad, and I guess we could talk about that here.
So I want to hit a couple of points. One, about the extremely small lineup they played. If I remember correctly, the previous time this happened, they said from 1962, was also on a January 31st, which is very odd. Secondly, Russ playing great, not shooting any threes, and that, I think, it is indeed connected to why he's been so much more effective lately. Somehow they finally someone finally got through to him that he needs to just do what he's good at and not do what he's bad at. And that's been really nice to see, and also seemingly nice to see for anybody who likes Russell Westbrook.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought this up about Russ's and his shot distribution. The change was really abrupt, and I had the kind of same feeling that you did about how it seems like someone talked to him, but when you ask around, it seems like it was a Russ decision. Like, I'm just going to stop shooting threes, which is even more interesting. the fact that he had that kind of self-awareness to go ahead and be like, you know what, like, this is just not me. I have to get to the basket, and the only shots I should take are mid-range jumpers, because they more than likely lead to drives than three-point jumpers for Russ. And it's really cleaned up his shot profile. He's much more efficient. He's getting closer to career norms for efficiency, which is actually abnormal for what he's been the past couple of years. He's actually more efficient, just true shooting percentage wise, than he was last season by like 3 percentage points because of this run. And you know, yeah, he's playing well. He's playing like the guard that the Rockets traded Chris Paul for, right? Like, it was starting to look really dicey at the beginning of the year. Like, yeah, like, Chris Paul might be better, but to this extent, like, the Rockets really shot themselves in the foot. And, you know, now they have a better case for making the trade. And, yeah, I mean, like, so going back to the small ball thing, do you have a problem with Isaiah not playing? Because a lot of people do.
I don't really get why he's not playing at all. I'm not mad about it. It's just kind of confusing, especially given when they don't have Clint Capella. It seems like that would be a reasonable time for him to get at least some minutes. So it's mostly confusion. I don't really understand why it is that he's not getting any minutes at all lately, especially given that not long ago, Mike D'Antoni seemed to be high on him playing somewhat in the rotation.
Yeah, I'm kind of where you're at. Like, I'm not bothered by it, but I do think Isaiah has earned his keep. Like, I think he's good enough to play 10 to 15 minutes a game in the regular season. I don't think he's a postseason player yet. Like, I just, like I don't, I like if he falls out of the rotation completely in the playoffs as well, like, I don't even, like, I would not fault Mike D'Antoni for that. Like, I don't know how you can possibly justify playing him in the postseason, but in the regular season when the Rockets actively need tall bodies, like, yeah, I would play him. Like, I think he's an NBA caliber backup center, and I think he can rebound the ball well. He definitely hustles really, really well. There's never an issue with effort with him. And, I think he's good enough to play, but he's just not playing. And the Rockets need tall bodies, and they've resorted to this small ball lineup, which I think it's nice in spurts, but I think the amount of work they're having to put on PJ Tucker's shoulders is a little bit unhealthy. And what I mean by that is, like, if you look at past seasons where the Rockets have had success with PJ Tucker at center, like, percentage-wise, they weren't playing him this much at center. Like, they're 25% of PJ Tucker's minutes are at the center position this season. That's a lot. Like, that's a that was from a couple weeks ago. I haven't checked as of late. Like, it might even be higher now. It almost certainly is. Like, his minutes in prior years were like 5 to 10% of his minutes at center. And so that jump is it's a little eyebrow raising. The amount of work they're putting on him is a little worrisome. And, like, I remember writing an article last year about PJ Tucker and how the workload actively affected his 3-point percentages. Like, the more tired his legs got, I mean, no surprise, his 3-point percentages dropped and dropped and dropped as quarters went by. You know, the sooner the Rockets can get tall bodies in their rotation, and starting with getting Clint Capella healthy, like, the better.
Yeah, they need bodies and size, and like I said, I don't, you know, he seems like he could be useful. So, well, maybe at some point we'll understand what it is that is preventing him. I mean, we've seen him not play great in past, but he's looked better lately, so it definitely seems like he's worth a shot. And they could use, you know, some minutes from a guy like him. But maybe he'll start playing, or maybe we'll find out that he hates Mike D'Antoni's cooking or something.
Or also, like, there's also this whole other thing of, like, we're not watching Isaiah Hartenstein every day in practice. Like, even media isn't allowed to watch practice, so we don't know what's going on there and if he's performing to task in practice. So, you know, that's a pretty big component that coaches lean pretty heavily on. Like, Daniel House, you pretty much out of the blue, came into the rotation last year, and it was largely because of what he was doing in practice. So if he's not performing there, it's probably why he's not playing. That's my best guess. You know, like, there's also the possibility that just Mike just does not trust anyone under the age of 25, and that's not unique for NBA head coaches. That's actually pretty common, but they could definitely use someone to play backup center. Right now.
Yeah, well, I guess we'll just wait and see.
Let's talk about Clint Capela for a second, because we briefly touched on it. So his right heel has flared up a bunch of times over the past, like, in January alone. Like, he's missed a bunch of random games where the Rockets have had to pull him. Like, he's been, like, a late scratch. And, you know, I'm not sure if it's something to worry about, because he's played through it. Like, he's played through the pain, but it seems like the Rockets may take the long-term approach here, because they're actively planning ahead to play PJ Tucker at center and this small ball unit for their next few games. Like, their next game, they already ruled Clint Capela out, and I have a feeling he's going to be out the next game. So you're talking about that's pretty close to All-Star break. It might be prudent just to rest him all the way till the All-Star break and let him get healthy. What say you?
I mean, look, that's going to be their main concern right now. Winning regular season games is obviously not the highest priority on their list, right? And health probably should be. Clint has not looked the same since this heel injury came along, and he's been in and out of the rotation. Yeah, I think they just need him to be healthy and ready to go. I mean, maybe don't rest him so long that his conditioning falls off, but there's not really a chance of that, I don't think. Like, the All-Star break is so soon. It's probably would be good for him to have a little bit of time off and get to heal up slightly. It might also be good for James Harden to have a little bit of time off and deal with whatever it is he's dealing with.
Well, Harden's played better of late. And what I mean by that is literally the last game, right? Like, his effort's been a big issue. And, you know, Mike, he's hinted at, you know, maybe he's dealing with something, but he hasn't really confirmed to us what's going on. I don't think it's an injury thing. I just think for some reason he's in Spurs game six mode in a lot of these games, where he's just actively, like, not trying on both ends and just looks, I mean, to put it crudely, he looks concussed. Like, he just looks like, he just looks like a ghost out there. Obviously his shot's not falling, and that'll go in eventually, but even when his shot's not falling, he's not actively trying to get to the rim or find open teammates or try even like 10% on defense. Like, he's just, you know, letting guys line drive by him. It's something to watch. Last game, he started to try on offense. So he obviously took a bunch of shots in that first quarter, 7 field goal attempts. And he ended the game pretty efficient. He was, you know, he was like 6 of 15 or something from 3, or 6 of 14, whatever. He was pretty efficient from beyond the arc. So he's starting to get his three-point stroke back. But defensively, like, the Rockets are trying to make a push here, because there's only so much season left. And if the Rockets, again, I hate to keep hammering this home, if they really want to be a true contender, they have to try to get to that top 10, try to get to a top 10 defense. And it's not helping that Harden's playing like this. It's not helping that he's playing like 2014 James Harden, where, you know, guys made fun of him and made YouTube videos about him, right? Like, that's not a help.
Yeah, I think that's right. And I don't know what they do within this team to get to that point. I mean, they've shown flashes that they can have a good defense. Clint getting healthy and James getting over whatever is going on with him will certainly help a lot. But yeah, I think I'm still of the belief that they need another guy to really be able to hold this defense together. And it doesn't have to be like, you know, a world beater type guy. They don't need like a solid starter. They just need a solid rotation player who can defend on the wing and grab some boards. And I think that'll help them out a lot. But like, I agree with you that they need to get this defense together. There's too many games where they just totally like they just lose the rope on the defensive end and they start giving up wide open corner threes and stuff like that. And just they'll let any team back into any game. And I know that this is a league-wide phenomenon right now, and there are reasons for that, but the Rockets are worse than most about this.
All right, I mentioned it at the top, but we're now going to take a quick break to tell you about our new sponsor, Bet Online. Miss your chance to win big by betting on the Super Bowl? Fear not, listener. Blue Wire is excited to be partnering with Bet Online to help you win big no matter the time of year. With March Madness, the Masters, and Major League Opening Day right around the corner, BetOnline has you covered for all your latest news, scores, and odds. It's the best way to place your bets, and it's free to sign up. Plus, it's never too early to lay down your future bet for Super Bowl 2021. Head over to betonline.ag and use our promo code BLUEWIRE to revive your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. We signed up, it's super easy, and if you're making wagers, it's a fantastic way to support the podcast. Again, that's promo code BLUEWIRE, all one word, when you sign up at betonline.ag. Bring your best bets home with BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts. All right, that's a pretty clean transition to our next subject, the NBA trade deadline. So the trade deadline is Thursday, February 6th, 3 p.m. Eastern or 2 p.m. Central for the Houston listeners. This is going to be an interesting deadline for the Rockets in that I sat down and thought about it this afternoon, and this is really like the only time Morey's like he's scraping the barrel here. Like he has nothing to work with in terms of trade assets. And I've thought about it. I can't find any other time where he's literally had like his first round pick and that's it and not much salary to work with. Like the Rockets have traded future first round picks before, obviously, but the scarcity of picks combined with their current roster situation, combined with like the amount of contracts they have available to trade, like that's unheard of for a Daryl Morey team. It kind of speaks to how deep into trying to win a title they are. Like they've traded everything pretty much. They don't have much like to work with. Like when you look at the Rockets roster at Summer League, they had no young prospects. They had Isaiah Hartenstein, and that's it. Yeah, and at the deadline, they're pretty much going to have Nene's contract, their 2020 first round pick, which it looks like, according to Jonathan Fagan, the widespread assumption is that they're going to try and move that for a good player. And, you know, I guess Thabo Sefolosha or Tyson Chandler, like those are decent salary fillers and those guys don't need to be asked before they're traded. Like as opposed to Gerald Green and Austin Rivers, like I guess, you know, you're working with Nene, Thabo and Tyson and that's it in terms of assets. Like the Rockets are, unless they touch their core players, they don't have much to work with at the deadline here.
Yeah, they just don't have any salary. And that has been one of the weirdest things. But it makes sense. Like you said, they've been shooting for a title for a while, and that involves using up all of those mid-range salaries and, you know, prospect players and stuff and your future draft picks. And more importantly, allowing your salary to be comprised of primarily your star and core players. And, you know, as you have to keep giving guys raises to keep them around, eventually you don't have much room to work with and you end up having a lot of veteran minimum style players, but you can't trade those guys. Even if these are players that other teams want, and I'm not even going to say that's necessarily true about the veteran minimum players the Rockets have, because the ones that other teams want are also the ones that the Rockets want. But the difficulty is the salary, right? They can't as you said, unless they were to move one of their core players, unless they move like Eric Gordon or Clint Capella, they really can't get very much back unless they just pile together up a whole lot of salaries. You know, like a lot of trade moves for a decent player end up having to include someone at least as important as Daniel House to make anything get done. And while Daniel House is definitely not untouchable, that's a bigger piece of the rotation than you'd like to move to pick up one more rotation player. So you're right. This is a hard space for Morey to be in, both because he doesn't have much to work with, and also it does feel like there's a lot on the line this season. He really needs to make this work because who knows who is in what hot seats, you know?
Can you remember a time in his tenure where he's been this cornered?
I don't think so. I mean, I'd have to go back and look at his like tenure before the Rockets to figure out what if there even is anything like that back there. But he wasn't, you know, this seems to be probably it. And the team feels cornered in a way, too, not just Daryl Morey.
Yeah, and I guess you can point to that 41-41 season where they fired Kevin McHale and they had all that salary cap space to work with and they had to nail their signings and get back to, you know, respectability. I guess you can point to that, but I mean, even then they had assets to work with. And at this point, like they, again, like the Westbrook trade annihilated like their future prospects. Like they have, you know, like this is kind of why I talk about like roster spots as such a valuable commodity for the Rockets, because that's pretty much all they have. They have to nail their like what they do with the back end of their roster spots. Like, so if you find someone who just isn't like who might be an NBA player or kind of you're not really sure, like you're better off cutting it if you're in a position like the Rockets, because that roster spot can go to someone else who can definitely help you. So like when people, you know, get upset at the Rockets for like waving Gary Clark or something, right? Like, I'm just kind of like, yeah, like that roster spot is valuable and he's taking it up and someone else could get it, right? Like someone else that can actually help this team right now and potentially they can re-sign for a cheap deal next summer. Like, that's more valuable than Gary Clark. Like the Rockets are in a position where they can hold on to prospects and let them, you know, grow at their own rate. They can't afford, they don't have the time. They're a veteran team. Like, they have to have everyone on the roster be good. And that's kind of where I feel like this trade deadline's heading. Like, I think they're 100% going to trade Nene. Like, that's if you look
that's
at
what he's there for.
Yeah. If you look at players in the NBA, I'm not sure you can find one player on any roster that is more likely to be traded at this deadline than Nene. It's such a foregone conclusion that it's going to be traded. It's not even funny. And the only real question here is, like, are they going to dump him or are they going to get someone back? Are they going to use a salary to get someone back and, you know, attach a first round pick, get a significant player? You know, my suspicion is they're going to try to do the latter. But it would not surprise me if they, you know, if they throw in a couple second round picks or one second round pick and some cash considerations to try to dump his salary, or it would not surprise me if they don't trade him for somebody good.
Yeah, especially given that their attempt to make his salary some kind of weird trade exception was summarily dismissed by the NBA over summer. And he's now riding the bench so that they don't have to ever deal with those incentives. If he was not traded, I'd be extremely shocked. And they'll be able to unload him one way or another.
Let's talk about this rumor that surfaced this week with Shams Charania, where he reported that the Atlanta Hawks are interested in Clint Capella. I'm just going to say this, like, the Rockets don't make major moves in season. They just don't. Like it. I would be floored if they move James Harden, Russell Westbrook, Clint Capella, or PJ Tucker at the deadline. I would be floored. And obviously, they can't move Eric Gordon. I would be completely shocked if they moved somebody. If you're talking about a significant roster move like that, that is something they're more likely to do in the off season. I'm not sure. If you can get obviously you can get something for Clint Capela, but I'm not sure if you can get as much value right now as you can in the summer. And I'm not, like, again, like, you're going to have to replace a lot there. Like, Clint Capela is so important to this Rockets team, even now. Like, their pick-and-roll attack is, obviously they don't run as much pick-and-roll anymore, but even when they do run pick-and-roll, or when they're running even isolation, like, having Clint Capela in the dunker spot is such a floor vacuum for the Rockets. He's such a release valve when teams crowd around Westbrook and Harden. Like, he's so important to what they do. I would be shocked. Like, I really would. Like, I know there are a lot of people that have, you know, got their trade machines out, and you're starting to see it, you know, fantasizing trading Clint Capela to this team in an X team trade, you know, where the Rockets get back player X and player Y, you know, and attach pick X. Like, I would be shocked if the Rockets make a move like that. It really would. Like, I think it's going to be, you're more likely to see a smaller move where Nene is dealt and they get a good role player back, and then they scour the buyout market. Like, some similar to what they did last year with acquiring Iman Shumpert and then scouring the buyout market for Austin Rivers and Kenneth Faried. Now, I'm not sure if they're going to get as lucky, you know, like with last year's buyout market. They got really lucky. Like, Austin Rivers obviously chose them. And, you know, they managed to scoop up Kenneth Faried later on. But, yeah, I mean, like, I think that's going to be their strategy this year.
Yeah, I think that sounds all right. A lot of people seem ready to jump ship on Clint Capela.
And Break it up.
And Clint specifically, a lot of people seem like sick of him for, I'm not sure exactly why. I mean, he's had a couple bad playoff performances, but it seems to be he's looked bad since he has that heel injury, but that's an injury, you know. You can't really count that against him. So I don't see them trading Clint. He's such an important part of what they're doing, and it's just an inviting disaster to try to make a move that big right now. You don't know how it's going to work out. He's such a core piece of the team, and who are they going to get? You know, if they were going to get someone who's like a third star, I can see it. But they're not going to get that. They don't have the kind of resources. It would be a guy who's about as good as Clint, maybe a little bit better at most. And that just doesn't seem like it's worth the risk to do that to me. So I think they want to find that, like, last rotation defender, and I think they can do that with what they have. It just depends on who they're going to pick and, like, how much we don't let our expectations get out of control, you know? We're not going to get prime Andre Iguodala on the team. That's not what's going to happen this trade deadline. But, hey, they might get, you know, someone else who can fit into a trade exception or something.
Yeah, like maybe Markieff Morris, you know, Bielitsa. You know, there's some decent names in the market. I think what you said is right. Like, Rockets fans have to lower their expectations here. Like, they, again, with the limited assets that they have, they're just not in a position to acquire much. And if you trade, like, the Rockets need height. They're not going to go out and trade the only guy above 6'9" that's on their roster, right? Like, they need the. If anything, they're actively looking for someone who's taller than PJ Tucker right now, right? Like that's what their priorities at the deadline lie. Like, not getting rid of someone who fills a very big need for you. Like, if the Rockets trade Clint Capela, like, they immediately have to look for another replacement player. Like, that trade would have to include someone like Daniel Tice or somebody. Like, you'd have to get someone to plug that hole in really quickly. And if you do, I mean, I think you're significantly hurting your starting lineup, and you know, you may help your bench, but at what cost? You know, I don't think it's fruitful to explore that kind of a trade right now for the Rockets, and I don't think they will. Like, it would shock me. It would really shock me if they do. It would be similar to when the Raptors traded Valanciunas at the deadline last year, which also shocked me. Like it would have to be that kind of a trade where you're getting someone veteran and proven back. And I'm not sure if someone like Marc Gasol is available for the Rockets to be had. And, you know, it'll certainly be fascinating to see what kind of direction they move in. But I feel like we kind of already know what direction they're going to move in.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's just a matter of seeing which of these players they pick up. And there are quite a few of these type of guys around the league who are good, not great, and fit in that salary spot and can do some amount of wing play. So we'll probably be surprised, though. I feel like we're always surprised at the trade deadline with Houston, that Morey never does the thing everyone's expecting, but always something that makes sense.
Yeah, I, for the most part, I'm expecting, you know, I'm expecting them to do something, obviously, because Nene's contract forces them to do something, and they're just not good enough right now, so they have to do something. But I don't think it's going to be something major. So, if I were a Rockets, I would temper my expectations, because I just don't think they're going to move anybody in that starting lineup. Like, I just really don't. I would be shocked. I'll say this. I wouldn't be surprised if they move House. Like Daniel House is a good player, and obviously the Rockets would prefer to keep him. But I mean, if there is a deal to be had where you can get, you know, two quality veterans in that, you know, in place of House and Nene, I think they do it. You know, that's the kind of trade I could see happening at most.
Yeah, that makes sense. He is probably about the most important player on the team that they would be comfortable trading. I would like to see House stick around just because I like him, but that a trade there could make sense, and so people should not be don't be surprised, and don't be, I guess, trying not to be sad if that happens.
Yeah, I think that about covers everything, right? Can you think of anything?
Nothing fun. We could talk about how nasty things have been lately, but I think we've already seen plenty of that.
Yeah, I mean, that's a pretty good ending point as any. Subscribe to the Rangers Podcast on iTunes, Google Play, Spotify, and Stitcher. Follow me on Twitter @SaulMollyNBA. Follow Forrest on Twitter @DoNuts. Yeah, guys. Good night.